Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. It's been a big week. The Farm Bill passed the full House and now heads to the Senate. To begin the show, we got House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson's reaction after passing the bill.
I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled for our farm families who, I think are going to have a little bit more bounce in their step, a little more smile on their face, and they're going to sleep better, more soundly tonight because we've actually accomplished, through the House anyways, the process will continue, providing an incredible farm bill that meets their needs for not just for 2026, but quite frankly, into the future.
Yeah, we saw a pesticide provision, an amendment to what we saw in the House passed Farm Bill text originally. You know, do you think that pesticide issue, obviously still a big issue for farmers and ranchers, but could resurface, will resurface again?
I hope so. I think the Luna Amendment is dangerous. I think it puts our farmers at risk because it creates chaos in labeling. I think it drives up the cost of food for, to be in compliance with 50 different sets of labeling requirements, 50 different states. I do think farmer safety is a question because, I'm sure less than half the states in this country have toxicologists on staff. The place to do labeling, because this was just about labeling, but they confabulated it to make it emotionally pretend it was so much more than that. This is just about proper labeling these pesticide tools that farmers need to produce yield. So I certainly hope so. It also is a threat to our national sovereignty. If we, because of the Luna, this crazy Luna Amendment, if domestic producers decide you're going to leave the country, that's going to open up a vacuum that's going to be filled by unregulated foreign manufacturers that aren't labeled properly and probably aren't safed. So those are my concerns.
The next step for this farm bill is it heads to the Senate, where they'll need 60 votes. Senator Bozeman over there has not yet released farm bill text, but how do you think that the bill that you passed out of the House will fare in the Senate? Are you confident that it can pass over there?
I think Senator Bozeman's sitting over there with a catcher's mitt on, ready to take the Farm Food and National Security Act. He's more or less said that publicly. And we've been keeping him and his staff really up to date with, as we've worked so hard on the text of this bill. Now, he's going to have to make some modifications because ultimately he has to get 60 votes, at least 60 votes in the Senate to go forward. And I think he'll be able to navigate that. I have a lot of confidence that he'll be able to navigate that. And then ultimately, we'll be in regular order. We'll go to a conference committee to work out the differences.
Ted McKinney is CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. He joined us in the studio to discuss why progress on the Farm Bill is so important.
Well, the first word is joyous that we're seeing movement. So let's take time to celebrate that we're getting along. We can't dwell on some of the frustrations we've had. Just to remind everybody, these are supposed to be every 5 years. So 2023 was that fifth year, and here we are in 2026, and we're still trying to finish it up. I think when we talk to our members and so many in ag, and we cover 50 states and four territories, the general consensus is, very glad the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill got done because it brought 70 to 80% of the funding, but it addressed only 20 to 30% of the policies. We're now flipping that. We're dealing with 20 to 30% of the funding, but 60, 70, 80% of the policies. And all of that and both are important. So we're thrilled to see that Congress, both parties, are diligent, trying to come to some form of agreement. So let's celebrate that. But by golly, we've got to get across the board. We've got to get across that line because farmers are hurting and starting to lose a little bit of faith. And so now is the moment, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, some controversial provisions in there that we saw debated, but there's also some really important, provisions that really have across the board support that are very important to agriculture.
Oh, absolutely. You can start with some of the things that already got put in the One Big Beautiful Bill, the title commodity, the commodity titles and insurance, I think, largely got resolved. But this one, we are particularly excited about, four things. What had been a program that dealt with providing startup and smaller farmers, many of them fruit and vegetable and specialty crops, was nixed. It was a unilateral, not a bipartisan, not a nonpartisan bill. So we're seeing some new funding coming back for that. And that universally across all 50 of our states was so wildly popular. So we're glad to see some local food programs, which would be funding for schools, food banks, prisons, the community centers, and other things could come back. The next one, and this has to do a lot with my former life at USDA, is international markets. We're seeing a reconnect of all of the support for international programs. So what had been the RAP programs now is coming back to sort of come back together as the MAP, the Market Access Program. And that's what that's provided to all of the commodity groups and NASDA and others to help with food exports, which we need. The third one is foreign animal disease. We can dive into that a little bit more, but my gosh, it's at the front doorstep. It seems like everywhere, every day, whether it's high path avian influenza or the threat of New World screwworm coming up from Mexico. We forget PERS, which has been decimating in some areas of the country. It's still around. The threat of African swine fever. We've just got to stay focused on that one. And then finally, the specialty crop block grant, which is a fan favorite by all our members and that specialty crop community. We're seeing it move forward in a way I think they'd like. So we are excited. There's some things we'd like to see through that may not, but we are excited about the opportunity.
Yeah, a lot of very important provisions in there. And when we've watched, you know, kind of the debate on this bill and even pushback from, not that it's entirely partisan, but some of the Democrats, they've said, you know, there's not farm aid in there that immediately provides relief for farmers. But Republican leaders have said that they're looking to, you know, a supplemental right. or into the future for that. I mean, do you think that lawmakers, farm country obviously is in need of some support right now, but lawmakers can really get on board with another potentially $15 or $20 billion in farm aid?
Those are the figures we've heard from different sources, and yes, they do need it. Now, let's for readers that don't know agriculture, let's say first that farmers would rather not have any of that. God bless them. They want their markets to work. They want their own sweat and blood and tears, in some cases, work. So they would just soon not have that, but they have to have it to survive right now. So the first tranche was a start, and we're grateful to Secretary Rollins and all who helped support that. But I think another tranche is going to be very important, even critical. And maybe by that time, some of the negotiations that U.S. Trade Rep's Office and USDA are doing on trade, and with that, things like tariffs that seem to ebb and flow, will be resolved, and then I think we'll be on better footing. So I hope that that is included at some point, whether now or in the near future, it's necessary.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. The U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement is set for renewal this year. I asked NASDA's Ted McKinney if there will be enough time and attention to renew it in 2026 and if any updates are needed.
Yes, there will be enough focus. And I have to remind myself periodically that notwithstanding the frustrations we have with our friends in Mexico and Canada, and they have with us, it's a two-way street on some things, it is still by far the best trade agreement in the world. It really is. And in fact, this review that we're going through are not normally in those discussions, and so it was good that they put a review in that. And now you go through the slog of figuring out where those irritants are and how to fix those. But I'm bullish. Let's look back. I mean, the USMCA dispute resolution process did work. It worked a little bit initially on our frustration on dairy policy, and it most certainly worked on Canada and the U.S. frustration with some Mexico policy on biotech. So the system can work. But this is now to take those remaining few or those recently emerged few and fix them. And I sense from all my talks north and south of the border, and I stay up with that, that we'll get there. Yeah. We'll all be satisfied at the end.
Yeah, and let's talk foreign animal disease as well. I mean, you mentioned that at the beginning of our conversation, but, you know, very heightened alert. We've seen HPAI, you mentioned PERS, New World Screwworm. Watching all that, you have a lot of members that, you know, there's a great network, national and state partners to defend against and then also react to those. But, you know, how do you, what do you view at that space right now?
It's a big deal. We're deeply into it with our members because state departments of ag are usually, not always, but usually the home of the state veterinarian and the animal regulatory and the animal promotion department. We do both, much like USDA does both. And they have just been working night and day. Well, 2015 was when it broke in my home state of Indiana. And so since 2015, in different regions, at different concentrations and levels of frustration, we've seen high path avian flu. And we can't get a hold of it. It's being brought in by wild geese and wild animals of all sorts, and it's always cropping up somewhere or the other. And so we've got to stay on that. Eventually, I hope that a vaccine becomes something that's acceptable to the world, because you can't do it here and then disrupt trade. So high path avian influenza is at the top of the list. We cannot forget the PERS disease in swine. I mean, it's been around for a long time, and it's gone quiet because, regretfully, it's almost become routine. But it's still an enormous cost to farmers and society. On the heels of that, we have New World Screwworm and those nasty flies that lay those eggs threatening our southern border. It's now been as close as 60 miles south of the Texas border. And our members are divided. Many just say, don't you dare bring the cattle in. It's too much risk. Others are saying two states in Mexico, specifically Sonora and Chihuahua, south of New Mexico and Arizona, they do a very fine job in their stewardship. So maybe we're getting closer, not at the cusp, but closer to allowing some of those in. But I still think things like vaccines, which is going to be a global issue, other countries who import our products have got to be on board, as we have to be on board with their use of those to make that work. And then finally, African swine fever and foot and mouth disease are always hanging out there as import threats. So we cannot forget any one of them. They collectively could decimate the industry. And we're thrilled, back to the Farm Bill, that there is funding by Congress, it appears to be bipartisan, to replenish some APHIS, the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service coffers, and the state coffers, because we're the first line of defense. Our members are that first line of defense, and they do a very good job at it, so we're grateful for that.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Hennecke looks at the latest drought conditions, and this week's Map It Out.
U.S. farmers and ranchers are dealing with drought across much of the country. This week's U.S. Drought Monitor map shows the range of conditions. White areas are normal, yellow marks abnormally dry areas, and shades of orange through red indicate higher levels of drought. Right now, the Southeast is seeing the worst conditions, with extreme drought covering most of the region. The highest level of exceptional drought can be seen in the Florida Panhandle and southern Georgia. These high levels extend all the way into Texas and north into Oklahoma and Arkansas. There are also pockets of exceptional drought in western Colorado, a small part of Wyoming, and Idaho. Overall, about 62% of the country is experiencing some level of drought. With planting underway, producers are watching to see how much this will cut into yields. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hennecke.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put four kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world.
Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
Welcome back. The Farm Bill passed out of the House with a bipartisan vote. Ken Barbick with Invariant lays out the next steps for the bill.
No, I think it's great news. I mean, obviously, Chairman Thompson and his staff have been working tirelessly on this from, you know, all the work they put into the committee action. And then, you know, this week with a lot of back and forth and uncertainty about what the floor was going to look like, they were ready and moved forward, and they, you know, got a bipartisan vote on support on the floor. It was good to see, you know, some additional Democrats, you know, join the seven who voted in committee for the Farm Bill and get this across the finish line. So now, you know, all eyes on the Senate to see where this process goes next. But, you know, I, again, cannot speak highly enough about the chairman and his staff and the effort they put in over the last several weeks on this. Very impressive.
Yeah, and Ken, there was a provision stripped out of the text that we saw move through the House Ag Committee. The pesticide provision was stripped through an amendment in the full House. I mean, what's the impact of not having that included in the Farm Bill for agriculture?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of grower support for that provision that the chairman had included in the bill. You know, obviously, we've seen a lot of activity on that front, both, you know, on the legislative side, as well as, you know, the Supreme Court case earlier. You know, I think, you know, growers, you know, rely on what EPA sets in terms of federal labels. And, you know, we want to continue to see the protection of that, you know, very robust process from the federal EPA perspective and those requirements. So, you know, again, I think, you know, disappointing to see, you know, what happened there on that provision in the Farm Bill. But, you know, there's, you know, still a lot of interest from a grower perspective on maintaining the certainty and the robust registration renewal related requirements that EPA sets forth. So we'll see where that goes as we move forward.
Yeah, and Ann, we talked about year round E15, which isn't under jurisdiction of the Ag Committee, but they talked about rolling into the Farm Bill, but as debate went on, it has been punted again. I mean, what's the status of year round E15 from your vantage point right now?
Well, it's certainly been a very interesting 24 hours or so. There's been a very broad-based support, a coalition that's been put together to move E15 forward, including the American Petroleum Institute, the agriculture groups, the biofuels groups, the retailers, many of the refiners as well. And we had done a lot of outreach and working with a lot of offices and really felt like we were making a lot of positive progress forward. So it certainly has been a head spinner trying to keep up with what was in the rule, what's out, the process for moving forward with this incredibly important provision to have E15 available year round, and the great things that that does for consumers and farmers alike. So what we've heard now, they, as everybody knows, they have decoupled the E15 from the Farm Bill, and then we're going into recess. And then when we come back from recess, we've been promised a vote on the floor on the E15 provision. So there's a lot of work, again, that's been done. There was the House counsel that put a lot of time and effort into this over the last several months, striking a very important compromise that really allows the movement of E15 to go forward, as well as addressing some small refinery issues as well. So while we were disappointed that it wasn't put on the Farm Bill, we are going to continue working very hard and doubling down our efforts to ensure we get a vote on it in short order.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. but the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. Addressing year-round E15 continues to be punted by Congress. We asked Ann Steckel with Ardent Strategies if the provision could get enough House votes in May, or what needs to shift to garner support.
Well, listen, I think the coalition is very strong. It's very diverse. And the compromise that was worked on really was to the point where we were getting the votes that we needed and we're feeling comfortable moving forward. Unfortunately, there are some refiners that really are holding this hostage. And it's really to the detriment at the end of the day to the consumer, because we are in an environment today with geopolitical issues and the Strait of Hormuz being closed. And what we've seen in turn with oil prices going up dramatically, and what the administration has said, and that gas prices aren't likely to go under $4 anytime soon. Here we have something that will help all consumers, all drivers, by lowering gas prices 25 cents. So it really makes no sense why we would not move forward in short order to try to get this done, when consumers are really going to be the benefactors of this very important policy. Obviously, it helps our farmers, our corn farmers, and what that does, and the assistance to rural America, but the assistance that it'll be providing for consumers really can't be understated.
Yeah. And outside of the Farm Bill this week, we saw the House Appropriations Committee mark up USDA's budget for the next fiscal year. There's large nutrition program cuts. I mean, Ken, when you watched the Appropriations Committee markup, what would those cuts really mean for the ag and nutrition spaces moving forward if that budget is approved?
That's a great question. I think, you know, again, the full committee over there, Chairman Cole, has been driving this appropriations process through regular order and has done a great job over the last couple of years. Getting the process to a point where we see full year bills enacted, which, again, that's something we have not seen in a long time, that kind of success. I would say that, you know, the House is going to, you know, likely pass something that is going to be more in line with the president's budget. And we're going to have a robust debate and consideration as things move over to the Senate and into the, you know, the end of this fiscal year as we prepare for FY27. So, you know, obviously, I think some of the cuts that are in the House bill, you know, are going to be of concern if they hold. But, you know, the process is a long way from done. I think there's a lot of good things from a policy perspective that the committee put into the bill, and the funding numbers, I think, at the end of the day, are going to continue to be debated and worked on as this process moves its way through both the House and then you know, into any potential conference and year-end agreement.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Heineke looks at the decline in beer, wine, and spirits exports to Canada in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The U.S. has been exporting far less beer, wine, and spirits to Canada, according to USDA. This chart compares 2024 and 2025 export values, and the declines are steep across all categories. Wine and related products dropped from $460 million in 2024 to just $103 million in 2025, a loss of nearly 77%. Distilled spirits fell from $238 million to $89 million, down about 63%. And beer exports slid from $47 million to $17 million, a decline of roughly 64%. Altogether, U.S. alcohol exports to Canada fell from $744 million to $208 million. A 72% drop, or $536 million lost. Canada began banning American alcohol in stores after President Trump's tariffs took effect at the start of last year. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Heineke.
Register now for the 2026 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. The summit takes place June 2nd in Sacramento. See the latest information and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south, and it blew that way, and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we were to start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. And I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate will be in recess next week. AgriPulse will host a webinar on how sustainable production and economic viability can coexist on Thursday. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.